Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
You shall not bear false testimony against your neighbor. Now, it's the ninth commandment out of the ten, which we know as a rough summary of the law of God. Most literally, this commandment is about testifying in a court of law. If you're testifying in a court of law, be truthful. Now, the law of God takes this very seriously. In fact, this is the reason God commanded that you shall not punish people on the testimony of a single witness. Now, consider, of course, that if a commandment is important enough to be in the summary of the law, it's probably because people are going to do it. So, a single witness is not enough to punish anyone for any crime. And, as God commanded, if you examine the witness and find that he has given false testimony, has accused his brother falsely, do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So shall you put away the evil from among you. And, as he goes on and explains what that means, he repeats the old law, which you may know, the law of retribution for wrongs done to somebody. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life. Not just, in this case, for if you actually succeed in harming somebody. If you testify falsely in a court of law to try to harm someone that way, that's enough to punish you that way. This is very serious. God takes it seriously. So, I'm here to tell you all, if you're called to testify in a court of law, tell the truth. Food's not here yet, so... Naturally, there's more to the subject than that. As I mentioned, the Ten Commandments are a summary of the law. And, as wiser people than I have noted, people will try to find excuses. Jesus, for instance, noted that, yes, the law says, do not murder, but if you go around saying, hey, I haven't murdered anyone, that's not good enough. If you hate your brother, that's a problem. So, if you're not testifying in a court of law, you're not off the hook. The Bible does mention slander and gossip and backbiting, whispering, as bad things that you should not do. So don't do them. James put it quite eloquently, the tongue is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. I love James. He's so Old Testament. So, since this is clearly something that wiser and better people than you and I took seriously, let's consider it. Let's start with slander. Now, everything I'm going to go into for the rest of this is not about it. Speaking in a court of law where you're in front of a magistrate who will be passing justice, administering a punishment. Most lies, most slander happens in the court of public opinion, where if you manage to convince people of an evil against your neighbor, they don't need to be punished by a judge. The fact that everyone's going to be excommunicating them is punishment enough. So why do people lie anyway? They're told not to. It should be good enough for them to stop. But it isn't. Why is it so important? Well, let's start with one interesting story. This happened in the middle of last year. There was a very well-respected in his field, distinguished scientist, speaking at a conference in Korea. He was asked to speak a few words because of all the work he had done, deliberately trying to bring women into the scientific field throughout his career. And so he stood up, told a self-deprecating joke about how difficult it had been, but a rewarding and worthwhile effort. There was polite laughter from the people assembled there. And that was that. Until a journalist broke the story on social media saying, "He just completely ruined the conference, told this horrible sexist joke," and there was just this shocked, stunned silence. Oh, what a pig. That story went around the world. It grew in the telling, as such stories always do. People organized their campaigns to point and laugh at this. Can you believe that what this horrible sexist pig believes? He didn't handle it quite well, not being prepared to deal with this sort of thing. So it only took one nasty phone call to his wife saying, "Your husband's going to lose his job, before he started backing down. He was encouraged to resign from multiple positions. And, started with a lie. Now, the person who told the lie may not have known what the result would be. I'm pretty sure most of the, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people were directly or indirectly involved in this, most of them probably didn't analyze the situation and say, "Why, yes, I do believe that this Nobel Prize-winning cancer research guy does in fact deserve to lose multiple positions and spend a little time contemplating suicide." But it happened anyway. Why do things like that happen? Well, there are multiple reasons. I do not know the motivations of the specific instigator in this case. There are many possible things. I can't tell, though. The law of God says, "Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord." So, the first couple things I offer as reasons why people sometimes lie is that sometimes endangering your neighbor's life or his well-being or his reputation or his career is actually what people want. I mean, we have the sixth commandment for that reason as well. Malice, the desire to actually hurt somebody, is a serious issue, of course. Sometimes it is not quite so cold and calculating as a deliberate, premeditated act with the willful intent to harm, though. Of course. After all, any evil that one person does to another can come not from careful analysis and the judgment that hurting another person is the right thing to do, so much as an in the heat of the moment decision based on overwhelming emotions. Wrath, in other words. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? as James put out. You envy, and so you kill each other. So, of course, I'm here to tell you, don't hate your neighbor and plan harm against them. And also, control your emotions, control your temper. Because if you carelessly speak evil against another, or if you carefully speak evil amongst another, they're still harmed. So a couple of points related to that I'd like to make. When it comes to analyzing what happened and why, to the victim, the recipient of the crime, doesn't usually make a damn bit of difference. If someone's been slandered because someone hated them, or because someone was offended by something they said and their feelings were hurt and they misconstrued what they said, put a spin on it in their head because of how in pain they were inside, and said something evil and false against them, from the victim's point of view, they're in just as much trouble. It doesn't matter to that degree. Additionally, if you have committed such a sin, either of these, you will probably be tempted to make excuses for yourself, because that's what people do when they have sinned. So I'd like to point out to you all, not just regarding this, but any sin, neither of these, malice or wrath, counts as an excuse. If you sin in malice, or if you observe someone else sinning in malice, the temptation is there to say, why? I merely looked at the evidence I had, I thought about it carefully, it came to a conclusion on the right course of action to be, and I miscalculated. Oh well, better luck next time. Well, not necessarily. You may have started with the intention to calculate the best thing to do, but if to that good and noble intention you add from your heart envy, hatred, all manner of evil things that come from the heart, then no, that's not an excuse. If you started with good intentions, but you ended up somewhere bad, there is a very real possibility, which you should seriously inquire into, that there is something wrong that you put in there that now you must find, you must identify, and you must cut out and throw away. Additionally, if you sin against your neighbor because you lost your temper, it was the heat of the moment, you didn't actually mean it, that's also not an excuse. You may be tempted to say, oh, well, I guess I'll just not mean it next time. You know, maybe I'll remember. Control your emotions or they will control you. You need to learn this at some point if you're going to be an adult. Children are allowed to throw tantrums because their stubby little arms can't hurt anybody. When adults lose their temper, people get hurt. Control your temper. As God said to Cain on an important event, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to master you, but you must master it. He didn't.
Just a little question. You know, there are people out there, jaded, what have you, that say, well, everybody lies. And I don't necessarily believe that, but I do believe when you incorporate, like, embellishment, like, you know, which is, in my opinion, that's kind of a lie. I mean, I do think a lot of people do, and they do it over and over and over again. In your research, when you were putting this together, what did you find is, like, the consequence from God or the Old Testament or the New Testament on, like, that? Because it's not something that people do once. They tend to do it, like, throughout their lives to, for whatever reason it might be. Like, what happens? What is the consequence on this?
For embellishing and such?
Well, lying. You know, and saying things that are not true.
Oh. Well, for one, people tend to find out.
No, I meant that's how.
I don't really have a whole lot of an answer to that question because mostly I focused on people not merely saying things that aren't true, but saying things that aren't true that hurt people. Now, people who do lie for other things, selfish gain, do sometimes tend to end up hurting other people by accident. I don't recall. I don't recall anything specific on that. Right. So that's a couple reasons why people lie to hurt each other. Hatred and anger don't do either. Of course, people aren't always so sensible as to only hurt people when they think it's a good idea. Sometimes people are just selfish and callous jerks, really. Consider somebody who screws up at work and points to his coworker and says, he did it. He may not have anything against his coworker, maybe buds, but, you know, it's you or me, and even though it's my fault, I like me more than I like you. If you've been around children for any length of time, you've observed this. I'd say if you've been a child, you've probably done this at some point, but frankly, none of you were there when I was a child, and you can't prove anything. Reporters might be a little more prone to this than most, though. After all, news reporters, well, if somebody else breaks a story that you don't, people will be tuning into them and not to you. Similarly, if you can find a great story that people may want to know about before anyone else, then you get the ad revenue. Naturally, this does help spread slander. A couple years back, there was the shooting at the Batman showing in Aurora, Colorado. The shooter was quickly identified as one James Holmes. So, and of course, the media pounced on that, eager for any information, because they got to tell the public, because if they don't, the other guys get all the ad revenue. So one enterprising reporter did some research and found an interesting tidbit that Jim Holmes from Aurora, Colorado, had posted on an internet discussion forum for supporters of the Tea Party movement. So naturally, of course, he had to make sure that I got slipped in so that his network could have it and the others wouldn't. Wrong James Holmes, but oops. Negligence is no excuse either. Now, that is clearly explained in the Bible regarding the sixth commandment. I do think it applies here, and in fact, it is why, as I said, do not go about spreading slander among your people, because you may not be trying to hurt anybody, you may not even know that you're hurting somebody. It'll happen anyway. Regarding the sixth commandment, do not murder, but also, as the law of God explained, if you have a roof on your house, a flat roof for people to walk on, you know, like a balcony, we only have those on skyscrapers these days, but they have them in all their houses, build a fence around it so that your neighbor doesn't fall off and, you know, you be guilty, you have blood guilt on your head. Because people go up there, people drink up there, they're going to fall off of the fence. Also, if you have an animal, like an ox, which has killed people, you should kill the animal. And if you don't kill the animal, and if you don't keep it pinned up properly, and it kills somebody else, then you really got to kill the animal and the owner. Negligence is no excuse. So, be careful. Be careful that what you say about your neighbor is true. Doesn't quite stop there, mind. So let's talk about gossip next. Gossip, well, you don't even need to be speaking untrue things to hurt your neighbor. If you speak something true that really you have no business telling somebody else to, well, for example, if you know something that your neighbor actually has done wrong, or that you think might be wrong, and you tell someone else about it, you do not know how they will pass judgment on your neighbor in their own heart, and you shouldn't be too trusting of your friends. They're not any better people than you are. So be careful what you tell your neighbor. Now, gossip is mentioned a few times in the Bible. Naturally, like the really big stuff, like deliberately telling lies, is a bit more of a serious issue. But spreading rumors and going about as a talebearer does come up. For example, without wood, a fire goes out. Without gossip, a quarrel dies down. Because if there's strife between two people, the best way for them to resolve it is for them to talk about it with each other and resolve it and bury the hatchet. And the worst way to resolve it is for everybody else to talk about it and snipe and say, "Ooh, I think I've figured out that this guy is wrong," and everybody just sort of shuns him a bit and talk about it a bit more, and I think maybe this other, let's shun them a bit too. And then everyone's on edge, trying to figure out who they're supposed to disapprove of at the moment. It doesn't really help the quarrel go down, because then the people involved in the quarrel are thinking about the quarrel all the time, because they have to figure out what everybody else is thinking about them because they're talking about it all the time. And frankly, most of the people involved talking about it in such a situation, it's none of their business. It's also useful in gossip, that is. It's also useful in starting problems. Now, I'd like to give a scenario which is a bit on the hypothetical side, and that's for a reason. The thing about gossip things is it can be a harmful thing. It erodes the unity of any community because they're sniping at each other behind each other's backs. That doesn't help unity very much. Things that go wrong there tend to not be as public and noticeable to the outsiders as much. Which means any examples you've heard of probably are like people around that you know. So be careful, because if you're going to bring something up in the question and answers thing, I mean, you probably shouldn't tell about talk. What about this gossip situation I heard at work? If we're going to meet your coworker someday, probably shouldn't do that. I mean, even if it's true, we might pass judgment on them, and then we meet them, and then we treat them funny because, oh, you're that guy who did that gossip. You know, that'd be counterproductive. So, let's consider a hypothetical situation where you have some individual who is observed reading a book. Let's say it's a book like The God Delusion, a very aggressive anti-Christian polemic, and why this individual believes that since we're in a fallen world and we must be as shrewd as serpents, it is to your advantage to know the enemy and know what they're saying about you so that you can better respond when people bring such things up. Okay. He's observed reading this book by another person who is a bit more of the opinion that you should only engage with things that are edifying, and anything that's not beneficial to you, you know, could be a corrupting influence. So she sees this and is very very alarmed, like, why are you reading that? That's poisoned. You're poisoning your mind. And so she's very distraught and very sincerely worried, compassionately worried for her neighbor. And so one day later, when talking with a good friend, she mentions, oh, I saw this person reading this book, and I'm afraid it's good. He's exposing himself to corrupting influences. Oh, so concerned. This third friend, based on that, doesn't know actually what the book is or why the person's reading it. They might make up their own reasons. Who knows what they'll tell the next person in line. So, now, all of this can be avoided with difficulty. Because, after all, everything I've been talking about here is human nature. That's why they have the Bible giving us commands to do it, to avoid it. Because it's something that people want to do, and it's something that people believe is justified. So, seek your heart for any offensive way, and cut it out and throw it away. One common theme that happens in any of these situations, whether it be public slander or a private community sniping at itself from the inside. People are stupid and gullible. It's common human nature to go with what everyone else is saying, or at the very least, to not stand against it. This can be a good thing when everyone's working together to do something good, and you join in what everyone else is doing. And when what people are doing is bad, it's a bad thing. Discernment is everything. As the law of God says, you really do have something for everything. Do not follow the crowd in doing wrong. When you give testimony in a lawsuit, do not pervert justice by siding with the crowd. And again, I believe the court of public opinion does count here. And so, let us rid ourselves of all malice and deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. So, a few takeaway points. First of all, if you hear somebody talking about your neighbor, you should learn to recognize when it's none of your business and you shouldn't be talking about it, and maybe you should say, why are you telling me this? Like, are you trying to help? Because if you're not trying to help, why are we talking about this? Secondly, if you believe there is an actual problem with your neighbor, he has wronged you, he has wronged somebody else, he is wronging himself or whatever, if you believe there's an actual problem, what you should do is not go and tell somebody else. You should go and talk to them about it. If you're actually concerned, actually worried for their well-being, that's really where you should definitely start. Because they know more than you do about what they're doing. If you go and tell another person, they may not know what they're doing, and they probably won't because they only just heard about it from you. And you may not be presenting it accurately because you may not understand what's going on either. Start by engaging directly. This is, I believe, the reason why, part of the reason why Matthew 18 has Jesus telling his model for conflict resolution. Starts with, if your brother's wronged you, go and tell him between you and him alone. If he listens, you've gained your brother. If he doesn't, then you start bringing in a small number of people to talk about it. Only if he continues to not listen do you bring in more and more people. Keep it small, because if people don't understand what's going on, but they're worried, they'll feel like they have to say something, they have to do something, because, oh, this sounds important. If you don't know what you're doing, find out what's going on, or don't do anything. So, if someone tries to tell you about this great important thing that you need to get involved in because haven't you heard about this other person, you may be tempted to go along with them because most people would like to trust their friends. Ironically, sometimes this extends to trusting their friends when they say bad things about their other friends. So, be careful, be shrewd, be discerning. Don't believe anything that you haven't actually investigated enough to pass judgment. Because if you're not careful in passing judgment, your heart will pass judgment for you. Fourthly, if someone is actually being maltreated, they are being slandered or gossiped against, you should probably do something about that. And you should not just sit back and hope that the matter will resolve itself. When lynch mobs and witch hunts and slanders happen of any scope, of any scale, there will always be a few people pushing it, a few people at the top pushing the crowd along, a lot of people in the crowd who don't really understand what's going on, but they're joining in the throwing stones. And then there will be the people who say, well, I don't really know enough about the situation to pass judgment, but I never really liked that guy anyway. So they sit up on the side. They don't throw any stones. They just hold the coats for the people who do, watch, approving of everything they're doing. And then there are the many more who say, ooh, this looks unpleasant. I don't know if I want to get involved in this. I mean, if there's that many people angry at him, surely he must have done something wrong. I mean, I can't tell what, so maybe not. Well, you know, I can't be sure, so I'm going to wash my hands and turn my back. There's biblical precedent for that. So, I say to you, if I may paraphrase and adapt the words of Jesus, when large numbers of people rise up to speak evil against another, don't sit back and watch. You don't want to risk hearing on the day of judgment the dreadful words, "Depart from me, I never knew you, for when I was slandered, you did not speak a word in my defense." Find out the truth, act on the truth. Now, again, as I said, if it's none of your business, it's none of your business. But if a lot of people are bringing a topic to you, then it's your business.
Question. And you might have covered this, I'm sorry if I missed it. How should we act as believers when we see somebody else that we believe is engaged in slandering or giving false testimony, but we're not sure. Where we don't want to bring a false accusation against them, nor do we want to sit by passively, potentially enabling them to bring harm upon themselves or whoever it is that they're slandering.
Right, and there I'd say the same thing applies. I may have mentioned when you see someone doing anything wrong, instead of publicly talking about it first, go to them and ask them, why are you saying this about him? What did you actually see? Ask questions, investigate the truth, start directly and personally, and work from there, depending.
Great reminder. So you mentioned trust near the end. So if someone has demonstrated that they aren't a trustworthy person, to what extent do you like trust them again, or how does like forgiveness work into someone who has proven themselves to be a false witness?
They prove themselves to be a... Jesus said to forgive your brother. He did not say to naively believe that your brother will not sin against you again. So if someone has proved themselves to be a false witness, then you shouldn't believe what they're telling you. You should be more aggressive in questioning them the next time they try to publicly pass judgment on someone else. You shouldn't hate them, but as the Old Testament says, I don't remember where, I think it was Exodus, do not hate your brother, but rebuke him sharply, lest he be complicit in his sin. So if it's something he's doing repeatedly, you should tell him to stop. And again, this is one of these things that in... which passage was it? The bit about... I'm not saying we should avoid everyone who is sexually immoral or idolaters or such, because we'd have to leave the world. But I say to you that if a brother is sexually immoral or an idolater or a swindler or a slanderer, do not associate with such a one. So slander is one of those things that if someone, one of those serious things that if someone consistently displays that, it's one of the things that the Bible says you should seriously consider disassociating from.
Is there a bright line between what counts as slander and what doesn't, or what counts as gossip and what doesn't? Because sometimes someone will engage in that and say, oh, I'm not slandering.
No, that's making excuses. If you know what you're saying is wrong, it's obviously slander. If you don't know but you're not sure, then the legal term is reckless disregard for the truth. That's legally, that's still slander. I don't know. There's a fine line, though, there between slander and gossip. I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot of hard definitions on... I mean, here I'm using gossip to be... It's like slander, but it's technically true, but you shouldn't be saying it. But there's it's a matter of definitions.
I mean, the end of 1 Peter 2:1 seems to say, rid yourselves of any type or any kind of slander. You know, so there are apparently various types of slander, but we're not supposed to do any of them.
Yeah. That would be a good, yeah, I don't believe. You're working on that.
Did you get anything in terms of how somebody is supposed to respond to being slandered against?
Well, you're supposed to bear it well, and if they're doing it for the sake of Jesus, and if they're standing for the sake of Jesus, you're supposed to rejoice, because in the same way they treated the prophets who came before. Probably is something, so I should probably Google that. But I do recall something about if you're slandered and you defend yourself, you might make yourself just look even worse. But yeah. But then again, if there's no one to defend you, which is often the case, that's a common thing. I mean, consider when you observe someone else being spoken evil against. Are you always zealous to stand up and defend them? I mean, probably not. When it's your turn, that's how zealous everyone's going to be to defend you.
How encouraging.
No. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I don't know quite an answer to your question there, other than be careful, because if everyone already hates you, don't give them another reason to hate you. I mean, if you bear it well, they might notice that, wait a minute, we're being vicious and they're not being vicious. Maybe we're the bad guys. I don't know. That'd be good. Look it up and tell me what you find.
So I think it's really important to kind of figure out like what's behind it. So if it is because you're trying to please God and people as a result speak evil of you, then yeah, rejoice and be exceedingly glad. That's treated the prophet as well. But it might also be that God is trying to bring something to your attention. If you've not been really doing what's right, then it's better to kind of think back, okay, well, where may I have messed up and try to do what's right.
Certainly. And the thing is, sometimes slander isn't always, like, wrong. It's so much as an exaggeration, punishing too much for something wrong that happens. Then again, that's an excuse that slanderers always bring up, so.
And also you mentioned rejoicing for being slandered for a good reason, just like the 1 Peter 2 about like Christ's example. I guess he was being slandered by being called, like trying to have people to rebel, etc., and like not reviling in return, and trusting himself, and he judges righteously. So
yeah.
Just, I don't know to what extent Christ was slandered in crucifix, but.
Yeah, well, they did bring up false witnesses to testify that he was going to destroy the temple.
Yeah, he remained silent.
Yeah.
He called him names too, right?
Oh, yeah. They mocked him.
Oh, yeah, of course. The soldiers and such did, yeah. No, I mean, of course, they also slandered Christ during his ministry, and his response is to say, have you ever heard Matthew 23? Woe to you, hypocrites, you know, all that. So, yeah, that's why it would be good to... I'm not going to give any hard answers, because it's one of those things where there aren't a lot of hard and fast rules of this is the thing you must do in every situation. As far as biblically speaking, there's a lot where you can find things that look like rules. Do this, and then somebody they were in a different situation, and so they did something completely different. And it was good.
So then how do you suggest getting God's perspective on an issue? Because ultimately you want to be siding on his side,
right,
how he sees an issue. So how would you suggest someone go about seeking what God thinks about an issue? But this person and this person, and then God clearly has an opinion and a judgment on it. So how would you go about seeking out his perspective and his wisdom?
Well, first I would say recognize that it's going to be difficult, and you may not find one verse that tells you exactly this is what you must do right here and right now. What that means is if it's a difficult topic, do a search for everything the Bible says on that topic, and look. Sometimes you will find different things on a topic that... may seem very, very different from each other. Like my favorite example is the thing in Proverbs, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be like him. And then immediately next to that, do answer a fool according to his folly, lest he consider himself wise. So if a fool is speaking folly, you probably shouldn't assume that either one of those is the thing you must always do in all circumstances. Instead, when you find these different advices, consider what is different such that this advice works in one situation as opposed to another, which will require discernment and understanding, wise counsel from people more experienced than you, and knowing your own heart.
If I may give a slight answer to what Rochelle had asked in Nehemiah, part of the passage we didn't get to, is
the bad guys basically bring this increasing accusation against him, and eventually they say, hey, you're trying to be king. And he's like, no, you're making this up in your own mind. I'm not trying to be king. So here they are, they're slandering him and the work that he's doing. He's responding because it's going to negatively impact his ability to do what God wants him to be doing, versus just being a slight he can shrug off. And then he's bothering to respond in kind to the people, but he doesn't stop them from slandering. Whereas I'd say another principle would be, if it's a Christian who's slandering you, intentionally or unintentionally, we do have an obligation, as you said, Philip, to keep them from harming themselves or harming others, just broadly. Like, if other people entrust, ignore, unless have to confront with Christians, entrust if you have, you know, and then you have some obligation for their soul. But as you're saying, Philip, like, it's variable.
Yeah. Anything else? We have food here. So maybe we should eat. Any? Okay, great. God, we thank you for another weekend, another week closed, another opportunity together to worship you. We ask that you bless this this Sabbath to us, that the rest we take may be nourishing to our souls. Bless the food, that it may be nourishing to our bodies, so that we can carry out the good work of nourishing our souls. We ask this in the name of Jesus, through whom you grant all good things. Amen.